Welcome to the No Place Like Home podcast about missing pets. We are recording live from my home because the studio was kind of washed away by the flooding in Barrie, Vermont. But normally, that's where we record from, thanks to the Aired Out podcast and the Fly on the Wall productions. I'm your host, Mitch Bernard, and today we're going to be talking about, appropriately enough, handling missing pets and found pets in disasters and preparing for them. So with me today is the founder of Frank's Way Foundation, David Scherf. David, thank you. Welcome for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'd just like to start by asking you a little bit about the organization itself, how you got started, who's Frank, who was Frank, and what the organization does.
Well, long story short, it is quite a long story, but 2017, I took my boat out with a gentleman I just met, my dog Frank, who went everywhere with me to help the people during Hurricane Harvey. Little did we know that we were the first people to be there in, it's called Katy, Texas, it's a small suburb. We found out that we were by ourselves in a series of events, we were rescuing people, putting them on the boat, and a little girl fell overboard. So my bulldog, Frank, who never liked the rain, the water, anything, he jumped in after her. So, the gentleman, Tim, I met, that's the Marine flag in the back. There's a backstory to that. But
nice.
He went in after, he got the girl in the boat, went after Frank, and I had to get the family to safety, which wasn't very far. Come to find out, because I wasn't from that area, both of them were swept under a train bridge and further down. It was a tiny, tiny creek that turned into a massive, you know, rush water. So we got Tim back. He was up in a tree. His military training taught him to do that. And then I had to rush him to the hospital because he was in such bad shape. So from his hospital bed, I vowed to him I'd find Frank. So for the remainder of 2 weeks, during the daylight hours, I'd look for Frank. And at night, we would help people all across Houston and Louisiana. After about 2 weeks, I found Frank. He did pass, but I brought him home. And Tim came from the hospital, pulled out everything out of him, and helped me lay Frank down for his final burial place. So that's where this flag comes in my background. This flag was in countless operations overseas, and Tim's a Marine, and he said, Frank's a Marine now. He wanted me to bury that with him, and I just lost it at that point.
Yeah.
So, this goes with me everywhere, just to honor him and, you know, that. So that's where we started. So, but now what we do is every natural disaster since Harvey we've personally been to. So just a way to honor him.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And how many of you are there?
So we have about 200 volunteers. It's just dependent on work and whatnot. Sometimes we have 10, sometimes we have 100, just depends.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and we're all over the country.
Are those usually people who are already in those locations, or do you take them with you to...
It's a little of both. The vetting process is so hard that I try to spend a lot of time with people and train them and whatnot. So,
So what are you trained to do?
Oddly enough, it's the little things. Knowing where you can get fuel. That's a big thing. You can't go too far if you can't get fuel. Keeping the vehicles self-safe. It's a lot of common sense stuff that people don't know.
Those little details that kind of you take for granted when it's normal times, but then in a disaster like a flood, everything changes, everything's different, everything's harder.
Exactly.
Once you guys get on the ground, what do you do, say, in a flood situation like we have here?
So generally what happens is the affected area, it's so vast. I get asked that quite often. Anywhere the news is where we're not. So what generally happens in all This is all natural disasters. The areas that the news covers, the little towns, man, I have a dog jumping on me. Whatever town that, or whatever area that's in, there's so much aid that floods into there that they turn people away. So if you just go right off of that area, there's always people in need. So,
yeah,
you know, that's pretty much what I tell everybody, stay away from the news.
Yeah. And you're focusing on the pets, the people, both? I mean, are you like mucking out homes?
We are an animal rescue. Mm-hmm. But I tell people 90% of the time, it's the families that own the pets that we're helping.
Sure.
You know, there's just such a great need for everything that just to say that we just help animals, it's too hard to just help one. So
sure. That's great work that you're doing. Do you have a job in addition to this? Is this now your full-time work?
So prior to me starting the foundation, I did have a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I totally quit that to pursue the foundation to do it full-time.
Yeah.
Then COVID came, so that changed everything. So actually, yeah. I work part-time. I'm a mechanic, so.
Oh, nice. I'm sure that comes in handy.
Yeah. That's why I'm so good at what we do, because I'm always fixing the stuff in the field and whatnot.
Yeah. But,
all of my customers, they knew Frank or they knew what I do. So hurricane season, really, I don't work.
So I want to ask you a little bit about what people can do, pet owners can do during a disaster and to prepare for a disaster. I'm not sure which of those makes sense to do first, but maybe you know.
So the biggest thing is pre-preparedness. I try to teach people to be as proactive as possible, but everyone's reactive. The best thing is have a good a plan. Have a collar on your animal is a big thing, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. But just have something in place if something happens. So you could do that. Have extra water. I know the little collapsible bowls and just the small leashes. Having all that stuff, like I keep one in each truck. There's one readily available. Little packages of food. You could put them in Ziploc bags, whatever. It's a little overkill, but if you live in the areas that receive, you know, natural disasters, it makes a world of difference.
Yeah, I'm sure along the Gulf, they've got go bags all the time for
things like that. I know since COVID, a big problem is a lot of people they're at work when the disaster strikes. So that, you know, have a neighbor's phone number, someone you could call just to get them quickly.
Right. Sure, that makes sense. Know your neighbors. Make sure a neighbor has a key. Access to the security panel, whatever.
Yeah.
True.
During a disaster, it gets a little chaotic. I know when I was looking for Frank, there were so many different little websites and apps to find missing dogs, and there's so much misinformation that I just said I can't do this. I'm going to just go look for him myself. So that's something that's been changing. It's getting better, but make it easy. Put a tag on their collar. Usually the little metal tags, they rip off. Use a magic marker and write on them. Some people will actually write something on their animal, on their belly.
Yeah, I saw that maybe on your website. I can't remember where, but that seemed like a pretty smart idea.
It's so chaotic, and it's so, I can't even put into words how it is, but the problem we face is each state is different for how many hours. Like, say I were to rescue your animal. There's a period of time in which, after that period of time, if no one comes forward, then the animal becomes my possession. So it's hard because a lot of these out-of-state rescues they're doing a good thing. They really are, and they feel like, you know, we saved this animal, but they don't really see that if you lose everything, that you can't get your animal in time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard.
Those stray holds, every municipality, every shelter is going to have different rules, like you said, and some of them, where I used to live, I just moved to Vermont in March, but I moved here from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and in that region, each municipality, each borough, township, city, whatever, has its own contract with some individual or company for animal control. And everyone has its own rules and practices. And there are some with terrible reputations. And there's, you know, that, oh, they don't even wait. They euthanize right away. They don't have a stray hold or anything, or they wait, you know, 12 hours or something. And then others that will, you know, wait 3 business days or 5 business days or something. So it is really useful, I think, to know not just your own municipality's rules, but those of surrounding municipalities, especially in something like a flood where there's movement from, you know,
it is
place to place.
Yeah. And I mean, microchipping is a big thing.
Absolutely.
It's so chaotic and people don't sleep. Just make it as easy as you can for the people handling the animals. The other thing I see a lot is the animals will literally, we had some in Louisiana that within days they were in Colorado. So now you have a family that lost everything and they can go get their animal, but they have no means to get that far.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a problem that's never going to go away. There's just, you know, since COVID, all the shelters that I know of across the country, they're all full, like beyond full. Throw a natural disaster on it and it's even worse. So,
yeah, you
know, it's all our problem.
That's true.
We all have to fix it. So,
yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, overcrowding, even without any of that stuff, is a problem. And, you know, what I see shelters here doing, and I saw this in Pittsburgh too, is shelters and rescues in anticipation of a disaster would ship every adoptable animal out that they could to other areas, to shelters in other places like Colorado, so that when an animal is found during the disaster, it's able to be kept local as much, you know, as much as possible. So that brings us to, if we're during a disaster, like we had the floods here, what do I need to do as an owner? Maybe that's different from what I would do during normal times if my cat or my dog goes missing.
So the first thing is don't panic. The worst thing you could do is panic. The people that, it takes time. Even the, I know you call a shelter, like you guys just had the flood. You call a shelter, they don't even answer the phone. 911 doesn't answer the phone.
Sure.
You have to be as calm as possible in a very unsettling time.
Absolutely.
Start looking close, you know, and then start to search out further.
Right.
You know, that's the best thing you can do, and just put everything in place. I know it's so hard with people's jobs nowadays to where it used to be before that, you know, say something is coming, most businesses would shut down and say, hey, stay home with your family. And it's such a diverse thing that it's hard to, you know, people don't want to lose their job. I get it. But I mean, if it's that bad and you have to do that, and this is something that it's kind of, some people don't like me for saying this, but you need to give your animal the best chance.
Yeah.
So don't keep them chained up. Give them a means to get out. They're smarter than humans are, to where they know the weather better than we are, and they'll get out of a situation. Cats are the best at that.
Yeah.
I rescue cats the fewest. And the ones I do rescue are the ones that are in crates, the ones that are stuck. I think cats do amazing things. Same thing with dogs, but if you have no escape, then there's nothing, you know, anyone can do.
Yeah, so those are sad stories.
Yeah. So.
And how about finders? I mean, is there, I guess with different jurisdictions and these different shelter rules, there you might have different advice for different people. But is there kind of a universal thing that finders of pets can do?
So if they're, most people don't have microchip scanners, but if you have, like I said, I sew on the inside of my dog's collars their information, just a phone number, anything.
Yeah.
Because not many people have chip scanners. So if you have that, generally, and this is the thing, especially in hurricanes that I notice, as bad as it is, people are at the nicest they'll ever be. So
absolutely.
If they see that and they see a phone number, you're going to get a phone call.
Yeah.
So giving them that little bit helps. I've even seen zip ties around their collar, whatever it is, just something, you know, to get a hold of them.
Yeah. It's and I've seen collars that actually have them embroidered on there. You know, you can embroider the pet's name or phone number or whatever. That's something I thought about doing too. That's tougher on a cat, but I'll post in our show notes some recommendations for kinds of collars you can get for cats that are a little bit safer than a regular collar.
Yeah, and you can put them on them temporarily, like until the storm passes or
when whatnot. You know it's coming. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the good news is that with flooding is that we had some advance notice that it was going to come, and we continue to have that in the forecast. So that part isn't so nice. But I guess, you know, earthquakes and mudslides and hurricanes, maybe less advance notice, or I don't know. Yeah. I've never really lived anywhere that there's been anything like this before. So it's really eye opening. To see.
Mm-hmm. So it's the number one thing I get, and it drives me absolutely insane, is I get it. It's expensive to leave. It's expensive to, you know, go to a hotel. I myself have five dogs, so I can't just go to the Best Western.
Yeah.
But all too often people will tell me, well, I was here for this hurricane or this fire, and we were just fine. So I've been to over 20 hurricanes myself, countless other things. They're never the same. And until you see the true power of nature, even the people that fight fires and meteorology, we don't know anything about it. So if you have the means, just leave. Take a vacation for a couple of days. That takes a big stress off of us, because anyone that's doing rescuing, you have the, you know, your pet that we have to rescue, but there's also all the shelters. There's also all the farm. There's all these animals
that
need to be taken care of. And sadly enough, people come first. So if you call local law enforcement or even animal control, they're first, and this is, you know, pretty much every single one of them, their first course of action is to stabilize the area. So that doesn't have anything to do with animals. That's just people. So, you know, that's just the nature of the beast. So just be prepared. I mean, that's my motto with everything.
Just, yeah.
You know,
one thing that has been very helpful here is that the Barry City Auditorium is where people are sheltering who've been displaced from their homes, and they are permitting pets. So that's not always the case, I know, in a lot of jurisdictions. So I would maybe advise our listener to lobby for that. If if there's no kind of disaster shelter that permits animals, try to work for that for the next time that there is a disaster, and there will be, because climate change is real, people. Sorry to say. So if somebody listening wants to help Frank's Way Foundation, how would they do that? If they wanted to volunteer or donate or whatever.
So you can go on our email or our, email, I'm sorry.
Our website.
You go on our website, or we're real active on Facebook and Instagram, because we do live videos. I just put the camera, it's safer for us. I just put the camera and let it roll while we're doing what we're doing. But yeah, any social media, just reach out to us.
Cool. I'll post the links on our show notes.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah. If they want to volunteer, they can go through this training with you, or that's maybe an option.
Yeah. We do different things. I mean, you don't have to be in the field, believe it or not. The people on the computer do more. I get that a lot. They're like, I wish I could be boots on the ground, but believe it or not, the people on the computers they help us more than anything else.
Oh, that's good to know. Cause I'm one of those people who's much more able to do computer.
It's a godsend to have
issues,
people.
So that's good. Good. So. That's really good. I want to thank you very much, David, for being here, and listener, for joining me today. We're going to have links to everything that we've talked about in the show notes, which, sorry, I'm reading. I haven't done this so many times yet that I've got it memorized, which you can find along with resources for owners and finders on our Facebook page, which is NPLH, as in No Place Like Home, Mitch. We always appreciate a rating and review on your podcast app and a follow on Facebook. If you have questions or feedback, you can send them to me on the Facebook page or email me at nplhmitch@gmail.com. And until next week, this is Mitch. I hope we'll be back in the studio next time. And remember to always think missing, not stray or dumped. Thanks, David, very much. It was a pleasure to have you.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.